Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. And now it's December. It's been a tumultuous year. You may be looking for inspiration or refuge in a good book. This year has had a lot to offer, from graphic novels to sharp memoirs to timely nonfiction, stories of family, of friendship, oppression, adventure, and yes, guilty pleasures. We have three great readers here to review, reflect on, and celebrate this year's crop. This hour, On Point Best Books of 2016. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What was your favorite new book this year? What would you recommend? What might you be getting as a gift? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. All right, to our readers, we've got three. They've each given us a list of their top picks from the year. You can see all of those at our website, onpointradio.org. Joining me now from Seattle is Marianne Gwynn, book editor for the Seattle Times. Marianne Gwynn, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
From Cleveland, Ohio, Jill Grunewald joins us, staff librarian at Overdrive. It's an app that public libraries use for e-books and audiobooks. She also hosts the podcast Professional Book Nerds. Jill, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And from Lexington, Kentucky, Ron Davis joins us, co-owner of the independent bookstore Wild Figs Book and Coffee, author himself of Tangerine Tubman. Ron Davis, welcome to On Point.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, here we are. We've got a whole year of books behind us, and we've got you three who have read a lot with a lot of great recommendations. I want to just get your sense first. Marianne, I'll start with you. Has it been a good year for good books? How do you size it up?
I think it's been a great year. I've read more fiction this year than nonfiction, but the fiction in particular, there's been an extraordinary range from a new book by Annie Proulx to some very funny books to just some very sweet books like News of the World by Paulette Giles.
Getting a lot of attention. Jill, what's your grade for the year? We got an A, B, C. How do you size it up?
Oh, I give it an A. There were some fantastic books this year. I also read a lot of fiction this year, and there was so much to pick from. It was really hard. I only have so many hours in the day to read.
Ron, satisfied customers in 2016, or are they coming back and saying, wait a minute, where's the great one?
Well, our store, we mostly sell a lot of nonfiction. So fiction hasn't sold very well for us. It's been a lot of graphic novels and memoirs.
I mean, you've got fiction on the shelves, but that's not where your customers are going this year?
Not too much. They're regional. We kind of cater to our neighborhood for the most part. We're very niche. A lot of nonfiction like Hillbilly Elegy, that type of thing, it sells well for us.
Hillbilly Elegy, and of course, this is one that a lot of people have talked about trying to get their minds around exactly what happened in our election this year and parts of the electorate that maybe feel disenfranchised. Marianne Gwynn, what about that impulse? You went for fiction. A lot of people may want to understand the world this year, the real nonfiction world.
Sure, I think that's correct, especially after the election. People are looking for that sort of thing. And besides the book Hillbilly Elegy, there was a book called White Trash. There was a book called White Rage. And all these books tap into sort of the big divide between, you know, certain people in the middle of the country in a certain class and the more educated classes. I mean, people are finally looking at this topic, and it's probably overdue.
Give us a little reading, if you'd be good enough, Marianne, from Chris Batchelder. He's got something called The Throwback Special. Describe the book to us. It's right high on your list. Describe it.
Okay. This is an extremely funny book. It's about a group of middle-aged males who get together at a hotel every year, and they recreate the 1985 play in which New York Giants linebacker Lawrence Taylor sacked Washington quarterback Joe Theismann, breaking Theismann's leg in several places.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
Yeah, set it up. Who's talking to whom here, and give us a little setup.
Okay, these guys see each other every year. Yeah. So Andy, one participant, is sitting in his car in the rain, and he sees George heading toward him. They have known each other for years, and Andy knows exactly what to expect. So
let's hear it from the Throwback Special by Chris Batchelder. Take us away, Marianne.
Whenever anyone asked George how he was doing or how his year had been, he always replied the same way, just doing my thing. Then he would talk in a slow and agonizingly thoughtful way about budget cuts at both the state and local levels, the power of information, the marketplace of ideas, the future of the book, the public's appetite for memoir, the digital divide, and worst of all, the First Amendment. Andy hated talking to librarians, and he did not want to be hugged. He cut his engine, not unlike an animal playing dead. He worked earnestly and with renewed vigor at the pretend mud in his cleats. A sudden vaporous notion, he should not have come, dissipated before it could condense into conviction. He kept his head down, hoped George would menace someone else with his idealistic interpretations of devastating factual evidence. There was a tap on the passenger side window. Andy looked up to see George giving him what he believed to be the first peace sign he had ever seen outside documentary footage. George's face was so close to the window that he was fogging the glass. "Hi, George," Andy mumbled. He kept the doors shut, the windows raised. "Andy," George said. "How's it going?" "Just doing my thing," George yelled.
And boom, right in the middle of politics, we know what's to come from the way he's described that. Throwback special, what else is at the top of your list, Marianne?
I love News of the World by Paulette Giles. It's the story of the life of an aging ex-Army captain in post-Civil War in Texas. And he reads the News of the World to audiences. People pay to see him read newspapers. It's a pretty good life, but then he agrees to escort an orphan girl across Texas. She's been kidnapped by the Kiowas, and he's supposed to return her to her family, but they just form this wonderful bond. It's a great adventure story and a beautiful look at an older man and a young girl and how they come together.
News of the World by Paulette Giles. Jill, Ron, I want to get to yours. We've got a lot of callers as well here. Boone, North Carolina. Robert, thank you for calling. You're on the air, Robert.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. It's great to participate in your program. The book I am currently reading, which is absolutely fascinating, is called Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance. Vance grew up in eastern Kentucky, and he tells the story of his life and his family. It's a very strong evocation of mountain life. I taught for 32 years at Berea College in Kentucky, and taught a huge number of students from eastern Kentucky in the Appalachian Mountain region. And this story rings so true.
We had J.D. Vance on this show earlier in the year talking about it, Hillbilly Elegy. And, of course, as you know from reading it, Robert, this is not a diss on people. This is trying to understand how people are feeling about their lives and the country they're living in right now.
Yes, absolutely.
And you know the area. You're at Berea College. That's fantastic. You thumbs up from somebody who knows it well, Robert.
Right. One of my dear friends who lives in North Carolina also grew up in eastern Kentucky. She's reading it, and she said, "This is my story."
Robert, I appreciate your call. Jill, let me come to you on that. That's on your list, Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance. What puts it on your best of the year?
I loved how J.D. Vance, able to take this approach of sort of an outsider looking in. I mean, he grew up in this community with these people in Appalachia and then went on and went to school and became educated. And so he has this very unique perspective of looking back at his life and able to make it a little more accessible for people who are not familiar with that region. And I actually went to graduate school at the University of Kentucky, so I'm also very familiar with Berea and that area and have friends from that area. So getting the chance to see it from someone who has been there, I think, is a great way to understand that area a little bit better.
People who know the turf, with thumbs up there, it's got a lot of attention this year as folks sort through the aftermath of the election, and in the run-up to that as well. Ron Davis, people looking for a great read, something that will just engross and capture them. What do you recommend, Ron?
Well, right now, The Regional Office is Under Attack by Manuel Gonzalez. It's a very fun read, sort of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer meets Die Hard, which is how it's been mentioned online and in reviews. And that's on point.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer meets Die Hard. I have not read Manuel Gonzalez before. Is this surreal fiction? What's the setting? What's going on in the regional offices under attack?
Yes, it's an office of assassins and super-powered beings, to some extent, that hide behind the facade of a travel agency. So there is some inner turmoil going on, and former members of kind of they're staging a coup, and it picks up from there. It just begins with this onslaught against the regional office.
All right. The regional office is under attack by Manuel Gonzalez. It sounds wild and hairy. Well, you've got one by Nicole Dennis Benn here. Here Comes the Sun. Tell us about it.
That is one I haven't read. Our list is was compiled by myself and a couple others in the store. And so I'm not familiar with that. I understand it to be a very fantastic book, but, you know, when y'all asked us to put together our list, we did the best. We mistakenly did the best 10 selling books for us, and some of those aren't from this year. So those are books we're more familiar with. But
got it. This is about a Jamaican family in the 1990s. Tough family life there. Here Comes the Sun by Nicole Dennis Benn. Marianne, for folks who just want to get swept away, really lost in a book, what have you got?
Oh, that's a good question. I really loved a book called Thomas Jefferson Dreams of Sally Hemings by Stephen O'Connor. It is a challenging book, but it's just an amazing work of the imagination. Connor recreates the relationship with Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings, his slave and common law wife. And he uses every literary form going. Hemings keeps an imagined diary. There's magical realism. There's actual excerpts from writings of Jefferson's former slaves. And then there's the voice of the dispassionate historian trying to interpret it. And what this book is really about is power and its abuse. I mean, believe me, Thomas Jefferson holds all the cards, and that's what plays out as this unfolds.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the best books of 2016, Forgiving, Forgetting, For Reading, ASAP. Jill Grunewald is with us. She's host of the podcast Professional Book Nerds with Overdrive out of Cleveland, Ohio. Ron Davis is here, co-owner of Wild Fig Books and Coffee in Lexington, Kentucky. Marianne Gwynn is with us, book editor for the Seattle Times. We'd love to hear from you as well. Our books on your gift list this year to give, to receive. What kind of book are you in the mood for as winter moves in? What have you enjoyed most from the new crop of 2016? What's moved you this year, enchanted, enlightened, transported you? We have the lists of all three of our guests up at our website, onpointradio.org. Marianne Gwynn, one of those on your list is from Colson Whitehead, The Underground Railroad. It's gotten quite a lot of attention. What do you think of it?
I think it's an amazing book. You know, it really came out in like late summer, and so it's been much praised. It won the National Book Award in Fiction. It's the story of Cora, who is a slave who's trying to escape from a terrible situation on a plantation in Georgia, and she goes into the Underground Railroad. But Colson Whitehead's a really inventive writer, so he creates an actual Underground Railroad. I mean, the real one was people passing people along, you know, on their way north. This is a railroad. And it's surreal in some ways. He takes actual things that happened in history and kind of twists them and turns them inside out. But he's such a beautiful writer. He, in a way, he heightens what happened to these people and really just immerses you in it. So I definitely recommend it.
With an actual railroad underground, and what did you learn about the experience or the dynamic of that human endeavor that we don't already know? Here's another one. We've read so much about the Underground Railroad.
I have to say that I think I learned over again, perhaps, that just the brutality that was meted out to people who tried to escape slavery. Mm-hmm. I mean, just unimaginable things. And also the people who tried to help them if they were caught. It really made me realize all over again that you really took your life in your hands if you tried to escape or if you tried to help somebody who escaped.
Jill, you've got the Lindy West on here with her book Shrill, which I don't know. Tell us about it. Shrill by Lindy West.
Sure. Lindy is a writer for The Guardian. She has a very strong social media following. Her book and sort of, I don't want to call it a brand, but kind of her brand is a lot about feminism and fat acceptance. And she is very unapologetically herself. And so Shrill is part memoir, it's part body positivity. And it tells the portrayal of a woman, Lindy, trying to make her way in a world that finds her too loud, too proud, and taking up way too much space. And so it challenges, I think, a lot of conventional ideas about body image and who we are as people.
You've got a little reading there from it. Set it up for us. What's going on this reading, Jill?
Sure. So she worked, prior to working for The Guardian, she wrote for The Stranger, and they sent her on assignment to this Red Tent, which is a event that celebrates women kind of in the antiquity idea of the Red Tent and celebrating women in their cycles. She goes with a lot of skepticism. And afterwards, though, she sort of figures out it maybe was more enlightening than she thought. So this is from that. "I thought I was immune to its woo-woo power. But if it hadn't been for the Menzies tent, how long would it have taken me to understand that I get to choose what kind of person to be? Open or closed? Generous or cruel? Spirit jaguar or clinging ghost? A lazy writer, it's easy to hate things, or a versatile one? I don't believe in an afterlife. We live and then we stop living. We exist and then we stop existing. That means I only get one chance to do a good job. I want to do a good job."
From Shrill by Lindy West. And when it comes to feminism, what did it teach you, tell you, that you didn't already know, Jill?
I think it taught me a very broad understanding of feminism, and that part of that is just sort of accepting who you are and being okay with that, and being okay with, again, Lindy is unapologetically herself. That's kind of the best way to put it, and I hope to be that kind of person, too.
Ron, give us another here. Your inner critic is a big jerk. What?
Yes, that's primarily aimed at artists. It's nonfiction. It's by
Danielle Christ.
Kate Schatz. And no, that's Rad Women Worldwide. It's one second.
I've got it by Danielle Christ. Is that not right?
Yes, that is correct.
Mm-hmm.
But she's their book is just to get artists to quit being so negative about what they do. It's motivational it's affirmational in a very humorous way.
To Let It Go, Your Inner Critic is a Big Jerk and Other Truths About Being Creative by Danielle Crissa on mm-hmm. Ron Davis's list. And you've also got a book of poetry here from Christopher McCurry, Nearly Perfect Photograph.
Chris is a good friend. He came out with this chapbook. It's a dedication to his wife and his marriage and marriage in general, but his marriage specifically. And it's humorous at turns and profound and very sublime, though. He's a very good writer.
Share a little bit of poetry from it if you've got something. There's one of the poems called Number Six, I think.
Number Six, yes. Did you smash together these two pieces of soap? You asked me from the shower. It seems like something you would do. Really? Because tell me, what kind of person takes two halves of completely different soaps and smashes them together just to prolong the life and use of mushy, insoluble things? Who perverse enough to mold the slender perfume strip with the scentless white bar, one all lather, the other for oily skin? Who patient enough to preside over the coalescing? Who, in their vanity, would set their rough work out to be seen?
I thought that was just great. There's a real husband-wife kind of communication about who smashed
yes.
the soaps together. Let's get our callers in here as well. Ron Davis, Jill Grunewald, Marianne Gwynn, please stand by. Alex is calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Alex. What's on your reading list?
Hey, Tom. I'm actually I've been recently reading something from later this year that just came out last month, which is Trevor Noah's Born a Crime.
Yeah.
It's his recounting of his childhood growing up in South Africa as he was five-ish when apartheid ended. So he's kind of going through and growing up as apartheid had come down.
And born a crime because to be the child... What sexual relations between the races was illegal, and there he was the product of just such a relationship.
Correct. His father was Swiss-German, and his mother was, and I'm going to mispronounce this, Josha, which is an African ethnicity there. And so he was considered a mixed child, which was very illegal at the time.
We had Trevor Noah on earlier this year before his book came out. He's wonderful to talk to. Tell us about the read, Alex.
Oh, it reads just like his humor. You can hear a lot of his sarcasm and through it. It's very biting. It's very critical, but it's very funny and playful all the way through. And you can really tell that he can properly tell his story, which is a very challenging one, especially through the lens of him growing up during these difficult times, not being able to understand it, but how he actually saw and interpreted it.
Terrific. Trevor Noah's new book, Born a Crime, autobiography. Marianne Gwynn, what about biography, autobiography? Is something on your list this year?
Well, I loved Shirley Jackson, A Rather Haunted Life by Ruth Franklin. Shirley Jackson was a writer best known for her classic short story, The Lottery, which I think everybody had to read when they were in the ninth grade. You know, knocked my socks off. And The Haunting of Hill House, she had an astonishing range. She wrote really creepy, unsettling fiction. She wrote domestic humor a lot for women's magazines. She had four children and an intellectually detached husband who wasn't, frankly, all that much help. And this book really shows a genius trying to work within a lot of limitations. And Shirley Jackson died pretty young, and I was left feeling, boy, what she could have produced if she lived a little longer. But she, what she did while she was alive.
Did she need Ron's Choice? Your Inner Critic is a Big Jerk. The book for artists to say no to their inner critic. Was she tortured over what she was writing? From what you read,
you
there?
Know, I don't. I think she was a person that I think her inner genius was just irrepressible. She wrote no matter what. I mean, from the time she was a young girl, no matter what was going on in her life, and there were a lot of difficult things, she always wrote.
So what was the haunted part? It's Shirley Jackson, A Rather Haunted Life by Ruth Franklin. What's the haunted point to?
That's kind of a mystery still. I mean, I was still a little mystified when I left the book, but she was fascinated with the occult. She would do tarot readings at parties. That was just a big theme in her fiction, and Franklin makes the point that she was fascinated with witches because they were women who had power in a society where women didn't have any power. So maybe that had something to do with it.
Biography there from Ruth Franklin on Shirley Jackson, the author of The Lottery. Raleigh in Peterborough, New Hampshire. Raleigh, thank you very much for calling. You're on.
Thank you.
Hi, Raleigh. What are you reading?
A book called Rust Belt Boy by Paul Hertnecke. And it offers a different slant on the Rust Belt than Hillbilly Elegy. It's a loving memoir of a small steel town outside of Pittsburgh and dedicated to those who stayed behind.
And is the when you say a loving take on that, is it just sentimental? Is it nostalgic for a time?
I think it's more than that. It is certainly not sentimental or treacly, but it understands it's the author grew up in a warm, loving neighborhood and family. It's stories of the immigrants who came to the area working in the steel mills and the immigrant culture. It also has relevance for other immigrant movements and cultures establishing themselves around the world, but it's a story of family and place, and also still connected to that area. He still has connections, goes back there, but has not turned his back on the area.
Connectedness, something that everybody longs for. Rust Belt Boy by Paul Hertnecki. Raleigh, thank you very much for that recommendation. Jill, you've got one here called The Darkness Knows of a Different Place and Different Time. I think this is 1930s Chicago. Tell us about it.
It is. Yeah, it's 1930s Chicago. The best way to probably describe it is a 1930s Radioland murder mystery. This was just a really fun book to read. It takes place, again, at a radio station, you know, very classic, iconic. It's very atmospheric. And in a lot of ways, the writer, Cheryl Huntingford, is from Chicago. She lives there. So it's in a love letter to Chicago in a lot of her descriptions.
And set in a radio station, murder mystery. I don't know. Will it give me nightmares, Jill?
No, not at all. It's very lighthearted.
Good. The Darkness Knows by Cheryl Huntingford. Carla in New Gloucester, Maine. Thank you for calling, Carla. You're on. What have you been reading?
Thank you, Tom, for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I am partway through a book called Loving Eleanor, and it's by Susan Whitted Albert. And it's historical fiction based on 3,300 letters that went between Eleanor Roosevelt and Lorena Hickok. And Lorena was an AP journalist, one of the first female AP journalist, and it's just a really readable story about their relationships. And it's very interesting what takes place in FDR's White House.
And these is the depiction here of a first lady and a reporter who were lovers, Carla.
Yes, they were. And it's also interesting because Eleanor was so private a person, and she had so many of her own interests that she wanted to help people all over the country, and she really dreaded being in the public eye and having to do the things that a first lady was expected to do.
And how does it depict FDR's understanding of all that, or does it?
Well, FDR is confronted with a rumor at one point about his wife and this Lorena Hickok, and his reply to someone who tells him about it is, "What my wife does behind closed doors is her business."
Carla, thank you very much. A recommendation there from Maine, Loving Eleanor by Susan Whittig Albert. Another here from Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Rich, you're on. What do you have?
Hi, Tom. I'm finishing Ken Pisani's Amped. It's about a guy named Aaron who loses his left arm in an auto accident. And in adjusting, he goes home to live with his retired dad, who's a 1964 Olympic biathlon athlete. The mom, the guy is middle-aged, but the mom has left the dad and is taken up with a fireman 12 years younger than her and lives in a yurt, comes back for visits. And there's a radio angle in that the guy is in love with a radio host, Sunny Lee, who she's a lush voice radio commentator on scientific facts. It's very funny. I've never heard of the author before. I just picked it off the library shelves.
Hey, he's living in a yurt, and you got love with and radio. How can you go wrong? Amped, A-M-P apostrophe D, I think, by Ken Pisani, P-I-S-A-N-I. Rich, thanks for that recommendation. Ron, tell us about Patience by Daniel Clowes.
Yes, that's a great graphic novel. It's a time traveling noirish type of thing where a gentleman acquires the ability to travel back in time. It's not his device, but he's just trying to write, all the things went wrong in his life with the passing of a wife and just trying to change his fortunes. And as time travel does, he goes back and pretty much creates some of the events that he ends up that kind of ruins his life. So,
graphic novels got a big run of attention. I don't know, starting maybe a decade or so ago. Are they still big sellers for you there, Ron?
For our store, yes. Paper Girls, Saga, Patience, and there are several others that just have done pretty well. Lumberjanes have done very well for us.
And what about the visual style of Patience from Daniel Clowes?
It's very colorful, almost psychedelic in some frames. But if anyone is familiar with his work, I think it's some of his best work.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Goldman Sachs. Get insights from some of the world's leading thinkers on markets, industries, and the global economy in the firm's podcast, Exchanges at Goldman Sachs. You'll hear discussions on topics with far-reaching implications like climate change, autonomous driving, the future of China's economic growth, plus much more. That's Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, available on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play, and at gs.com/podcast.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the best books of 2016 for giving, for getting, for reading. You can join us this hour. What's moved you deeply off the bookshelf this year? What's helped you? What's taught you? What are you eager to read? With Ron Davis from Wild Fig Books and Coffee in Lexington, Kentucky, Jill Grunewald, staff librarian at Overdrive, and Marianne Gwynn, book editor at the Seattle Times, joining us from Seattle today. 800-423-8255 is our number, and we've got readers who are busy. Here's Barbara. What is she like this year? Fire Shut Up in My Bones from Charles Blow, the New York Times columnist. I'm Just a Person from Tig Notaro. Blackout from Sarah Heppel. Big Magic from Elizabeth Gilbert. Eat, Pray, Love. Marianne Gwynn, take us on down your list a little bit here. Talk to us about Commonwealth from Ann Patchett, Barkskins from Annie Proulx.
Well, Commonwealth by Ann Patchett, and Ann Patchett is one of my favorite novelists,
me too.
So I'm biased, is it's a semi-autographical book about two families. There's a christening of a little girl and a party, and two couples come together, and then and an adulterous affair begins.
Okay.
It busts the families up, and the kids spend the rest of their lives dealing with it. They go back and forth from California to Virginia. And it's just an amazing portrait of kids dealing with broken homes. And you think it's going to be tragic and it's going to be bitter. But what the book is really about is these kids coming to terms with the situation as they grow up. Really liked it.
Lots of people, of course, come out of homes where, not necessarily in that way, but things are broken. You say there's hope in this one.
I think the hope is that the kids gradually learn to forgive each other and their parents. That's the lesson that I took away from it.
Mm-hmm. And Barkskins from Annie Proulx is getting a lot of attention.
Wow, that is a doorstop. That is a big book. It's about basically the despoliation of the forests of North America, and it follows two different families. There's a white family and then a native family from Canada as they participate in the timber industry as it marches across the country.
Barkskins being woodcutters, I guess,
exactly.
A word for woodcutters. Mm-hmm.
There's so much research, and Annie Proulx is such a vivid writer, but she's mad. She is angry.
And sort of on behalf of Mother Nature here.
Exactly. And I really respect that, and I agree with it to some extent, but it does weigh down the characters a little bit. But it's well worth reading.
Did she give you a sense, she must have, of what this continent was like before all the axes and saws started flying?
Oh, that's part of the tragedy. She really does. Just the beautiful North Woods, and not just the trees, but all the plants, the medicinal uses that the natives use the plants for. She puts you right there.
Jill, take us to Dark Matter by Blake Crouch, high on your list. What have you got?
Yeah, Blake Crouch. It is a science fiction novel that deals with quantum mechanics. That sounds very sciencey and scary, but it's not. This is about a man named Jason who years ago sacrificed his budding science career to become a family man, and he never looked back. And then while out one evening, also in Chicago, he is abducted and knocked unconscious. And when he wakes up, he finds himself strapped to a gurney surrounded by strangers in hazmat suits. Well, they're strangers to him. They actually know exactly who he is. And he discovers that he's woken up in a world that is not his world. And he's confronted with the realization that even the smallest choices can have a ripple effect on the trajectory of our lives.
I mean, it's not his world because of quantum mechanics here, the sort of many worlds at once. And they've got technology for interdimensional transfer. That's quite a way to be kidnapped, not just from your home, but from your dimension.
Well, then, of course, he has to figure out how to get back. And it's just sort of discovering all of these different worlds and what choices we make can have an effect on the different worlds that exist. Yeah.
Dark Matter from Blake Crouch. Spencer in Charlotte, North Carolina. What are you reading? What have you loved, Spencer, this year?
Hi, Tom. The book I'm reading at the moment is The Winter Fortress by Neil Bascom.
Okay.
It's about these young men who escaped the Nazis out of Norway and then returned to disable, blow up the heavy water plant at Vemork.
Is it fiction or nonfiction? What, Spencer?
This is nonfiction. This is an actual account of these young men who left their families in Norway at risk to, you know, Nazi execution, and go back into Norway to blow up the heavy water plant at Vemork.
Part of a nuclear project there. What's it leave you thinking about war and, I guess, heroism, I suppose?
To keep the Nazis from getting the atomic bomb. And they're, if you've ever been to Norway, the middle of Norway is a high escarpment. And these guys are parachuting in and gliding in on top of these high mountains. I've been there. I don't understand how they survived, especially in the winter.
Yeah, that is super dramatic terrain. We've all seen the photographs. To be waltzing around there, even in war, that's no picnic. And yet it is, there they did it. The Winter Fortress from Neil Bascom on Spencer's list. Let's get one more here. Bob in Los Angeles. Thank you for calling, Bob. What are you reading in California?
Hi, Tom. Love what you do. Love the show.
Thank you.
I'm reading Hildred Rex's anthology of short stories. It's called The Chicken or Three Weird Tales.
Okay, that sounds weird. Tell us about it.
Well, it's there are three horror tales. They're each bound in madness, terror, and a cosmic dread, and it's sheer escapism.
And what's the setting? Is it contemporary, Bob?
The first story is about the axe murderer of New Orleans, who stalked the streets of New Orleans in 1919 and killed anyone with an axe who didn't listen to jazz music. That's just the first one, though.
Okay. We got it. We got a feeling for it right there. The Chicken or Three Weird Tales from Hildred Rex. Love it. One more right here. Yelka in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Yelka, what are you recommending?
I'm reading Rescuing Your Local Economy by Francis Coster.
Rescuing Your Local Economy, okay, by Francis Coster. What is it?
Yeah, it's nonfiction, and in these times when people are being replaced by technology, their jobs, he has really practical solutions that we can take steps on any day right now to improve the local economy. So I thought it'd be good for anybody looking to make a difference.
So just keep it real and fix that local economy, and it's not kidding. No surrealism here. Just fix it. Ron Davis, you've been paying attention to Rad Women Worldwide. That's a heck of a title. You like it. Tell us about it.
Yes, it's another very illustrated tale of 40 women from around the world throughout time. Hatshepsut, Frida Kahlo, and just many others.
So these are portraits of women of note. Rad
yes,
women.
Very, very feminist in nature. But it's a great introduction to young kids, I think, you know, for important female figures throughout history.
Stephen King was back this year, and he made your list with End of Watch, Jill Grunewald. Classic Stephen King, something new, something different?
It's something new. It's the concluding chapter in his popular Mr. Mercedes trilogy. More than the typical Stephen King horror, he, a couple years ago, decided to write a hard-boiled detective novel, and that's what this series is about. It follows his detective, Bill Hodges, and this kind of ties it all up. There are elements, a little bit of the supernatural, which King is a fan of, and I'm a huge Stephen King fan, and this reads like a classic Stephen King novel to me. Like, they're just the tone and the voice reminds me a lot of his very earlier works. It was a lot of fun to read, and it was an excellent ending to the trilogy.
He's still got it, Stephen King, after all these years?
Absolutely still has it, yes.
Marianne, we've got Zadie Smith out this year with Swing Time, but I don't see it on your list or any of these lists here. We've been hearing her out and about lately, and it's always wonderful to hear her talk about the world. What did you think of Swing Time, or have you come to it yet, Marianne?
I haven't gotten to it. I love Zadie Smith. I think she's a great essayist and novelist, but I haven't gotten to it. Our reviewer for the Seattle Times liked it. It's about two women who are both involved in dance, and their lives intersect in quite a lot of ways.
Zadie Smith and Swing Time out this year. Sal in Sag Harbor, New York. You're on, Sal.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Great show, as always.
Thank you.
Reading Climber of Crows by Ray Merritt. He's a local Sag Harbor author, and the story is about corporate intrigue, the death of a mogul whose will has overriding stipulations of international and global affairs, and a Wall Street lawyer, the protagonist of the story, needs to do all the legwork to resolve all the issues.
Is the Wall Street lawyer then the hero of Climber of Crows, Sal?
That is correct. He's a proponent of the mogul that passes away. He's hired by the law firm that represents him, but is challenged by a number of other forces around the world with insights and exquisite descriptions of every place from the Plaza Hotel in New York to the Carlton in Paris or other unique places.
So, Sal, let me ask you, Sal, is it going to make us more sympathetic somehow to this Wall Street mogul or less?
It gives us insights that we don't realize. There isn't always a silver lining, no matter how many billions of dollars you've amassed. It's a commentary on the state of affairs. The 1%ers may have the money, but not always the happiness that we would assume goes along with it.
There's an old, old, old insight that may be relevant again right now. Let's go to Champaign, Illinois. Ruth is calling. Hi, Ruth. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah. What are you reading?
I'm reading the latest book by Siddhartha Mukherjee. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing
Siddhartha
it right.
Mukherjee. Yes. Wonderful writer. What did he have this year? The Gene.
The Gene, yes.
As in G-E-N-E.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And a friend recommended it, and I went to pick it up at the library. And when I saw how big it was, I thought, oh, I can't read that book. I'm not a scientist. But once I started reading it, I really got into it. He writes in a way that's very understandable to non-scientific people. And it's mostly just stories of the research.
Research into genetics, I guess, Ruth. So, what have you learned about genetics that you didn't know before from Siddhartha Mukherjee?
I've learned it's complicated. yes, and I've learned what mutations are and how to combatant.
Combination, recombinant.
Recombinant, yeah, all that. It's just really interesting, but mostly I'm finding the stories of the scientists and how they achieved their, their moment of glory, their breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite fascinating.
And you got deep into it with Siddhartha Mukherjee, The Gene and Intimate History. Ruth, thanks for your call. Marianne Gwynn in Seattle, this is on your list. What recommends it?
Well, to follow up what your caller said, the stories of the scientists are fascinating. It made me realize why I didn't become a scientist, because you have to work for so many years on end doing really tedious work, often over and over again, to make these breakthroughs. And I was just so impressed with the will they applied to their tasks. If I could just put in a word about Mukherjee, he is an oncologist, a cancer doctor, he's a teacher, and he's an author. And I think that puts him like in the really the winner circle of people who can write about science and help people like us who were really affected by science understand it. I thought it was a terrific book. It is a challenging book, but I forced myself through it, and I'm glad I did.
The Gene and Intimate History, a gift when somebody with that much expertise brings it to bear for a wide body of readers. One more caller here, Miami, Florida. Gisella, we're thinking about best books this year. Gisella, what did you like?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I love the book by Jodi Picoult, Small Great Things. It's a contemporary book about race relationships in the United States and how things are. She does a lot of research every time she writes a book, so even though it's fiction, it is based on reality.
It's a huge subject in our country, our culture. What did you learn from it about race and race relations that you didn't already know, Gisella? Small Great Things.
Well, that is very complicated. It's just a well-written book. It's fascinating. I don't know what I precisely learned, but it's a good read, and everybody should read it.
Gisella in Miami with Small Great Things by Jodi Picoult. Sounds like a book that's highly relevant for our times. Ron Davis, are people coming in for books in this turbulent year? Do you think they're finding escape in books or maybe insight? Is it driving readership or the other way around?
I think social media and what's big for our store, I think, drives it. It's like Hidden Figures, the story of Katherine Johnson, seems to be people are starting to inquire about that. It's been out for several weeks now. So I think with our customers, with our readers, they come in based off the request of people online and the chatter that goes on.
Jill, what are you learning about how people learn what they want to read?
I think in terms of books, people are attracted to both the fiction and the nonfiction to educate themselves and learn new things and gain more insight into topics they are maybe not very familiar with. And I work for Overdrive. I'm a little biased. We offer ebooks and audiobooks, which means people can read these books without anybody, they're a little maybe embarrassed about the subject, they can read it kind of privately without anybody needing to know.
Full privacy. We've got it. Jill Grunewald at Overdrive, thank you very much for being with us today, Jill.
Thank you for having me.
In Cleveland, Ohio. Ron Davis in Lexington, Kentucky. Thanks for joining us, Ron.
Thank you.
Marianne Gwynn in Seattle, Seattle Times. Thank you so much, Marianne.
Yes, always a pleasure.
A big warm goodbye today to our producer, Abby Ruzicka. Off to Brooklyn, we wish her the best of luck. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for being with us. This is On Point.